Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Gnostic Bridge. My name is Richard Bullard, and it's good to be here. Good to have you with me today. And, well, I guess you're not used to hearing me call in or start the show off. That's because my co-host, Vinette, is not here today. And so it's going to be me and you. And we're looking forward to having a great conversation. I hope you're having a great day today, because we have a wonderful subject to talk about, and that is inside the mind of a spiritual warrior who wins. So welcome to the Gnostic Bridge, and let's get started with a word of prayer. Anabakoa, Gijila Yemeneka, Tatia Tessera, Kabel Renat, Huncha Saganu, Taharin Nora, Nagabor, Dorshe, Ye Kateka, Kabavat Sharam, Bakram Taram, Rakame, Viditeka, Tamid Gola, Kasim Kadosh, Beaptuka, Nahil Arateka, Lakit Gehe, the Umcha Pene, Zokre, Kedusha Teka, Shabbatanu Kabel, Ushma Sataganu, Yodea Talamo. All right, let's get started. Today we're going to talk about inside the mind of a spiritual warrior who wins. Inside the mind of a spiritual warrior who wins. Before we get started into today's conversation, and I definitely would like for it to be a conversation, you can call in to the show, and that number is 213-943-3646. 213-943-3646. And so, and if you do call in and you have a comment or a question that you want to ask, press 1, and I'll know that your hand is up and that you want to participate in the conversation. Other than that, welcome to the Gnostic Bridge. There's a scripture in the Bible. Let me just start there. There's a scripture in the Bible found in Matthew chapter 10, verse 16. It says, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves." You are sent out as sheep in the midst of wolves, speaking to the disciples, speaking to those who are conscious, fully aware. What it says to me is that we are trying to do our work as conscious people, surrounded by ravenous, I'm assuming unconscious people, psychopaths, and all in between. And therefore, there's a certain type of mentality that we have to have when we are trying to do spiritual work, conscious work, developmental work. We have to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Let me go a little bit further. There's also this contrast we see in the Bible for those of us who strive to be Christ conscious. And they run across this particular perspective about Jesus. And it says, and it is quoted to be saying, "Do not think that I came to bring peace on earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword." Now, what this suggests to me is that the work that conscious people do is not going to take place in the comfort of, in the context of love and light. As much as we espouse the idea that we are of love and that we are light bringers, the work that we do takes place in a very competitive world, in a world that is not designed to facilitate or to accommodate conscious intentions. Well, now, what I mean by that if it's the very business that you desire to start, or the very family that you want to build, or the very community that you want to live in, takes place in the context of challenge and controversy. And in order for us to win, in order for us to survive, in order for us to compete, we have to have a dual nature. We have to have a certain type of mentality to win in a world whereby things are competitive. And so the question then becomes, why or are we winning or are we losing? And for me, this is a question of maturity. The author, Neely Fuller, and the author of the late Francis Wellesley, defined this competitive and this world of imbalance, this world of injustice, that people who are the elitists, people who run the world, have created a world of stratification, where based upon a person's color of skin, a person's family background, a person's level of education, are at a disadvantage, no matter what their spiritual perspective may be. They are at a level of disadvantage in all areas of people activity. And Dr. Fuller lists 9 areas of human activity that determines the quality of our life: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. One more time. There are 9 levels of activity, or 9 kinds of activities, which defines the quality of life that we live. And they are economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, and war. So the question is, in a competitive environment whereby you're raising your children, whereby you are striving to survive and be economically successful, where you're competing for jobs, where you are trying to establish the type of political and social order, where religions matter, where the relationship between men and women exists, and people do compete for all these things. The question is, how are you doing? Are you winning? Or are you losing? Are you winning or are you losing? And if you could put a number beside your level of quality of life, from 0 to 10, in the areas of economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war, what number How would you measure your individual success, your well-beingness in these categories? What number would you put beside these categories in the quality of your life? In terms of your relationship with people who you consider family and friends, those are people who agree with you, who agree to walk with you, to be considered, that you consider family and friends. Do you guys share your family? How do you rank, and how do you define your quality of your collective existence in the areas of economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war? Are you winning or are you losing? Now, why is this important? And I truly hope that you can you will truly be honest and measure yourself in terms of winning and losing. Because each and every day, just like in the animal kingdom, every day an antelope or a deer gets up running. He has to run fast enough to keep from being eaten by the lion. And every day the lion gets up and he has to run fast enough to keep from being eaten by or keep from so he can eat and catch the antelope or deer, unless he starves to death. So even in the human world, in the human kingdom, everybody is competing. Cultures compete against one another. People compete against one another. Even and therefore, even in the spiritual world, it is said that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities. So the idea of competition and the idea of challenge is real all the way up. True spiritual or true spirituality or consciousness begins when we have the courage to carefully consider and evaluate honestly where we are in these nine categories of activity: education, entertainment, economics, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. True spirituality requires the power to choose to make an individual, a collective, and a cultural decision to take responsibility and particular action for transforming your life, your behavior, and your awareness so that you can be able to effectively win this war or win the battle. Because the truth of the matter is, we are in a battle. And when you look at various communities in our, the question is, why is there so much confusion? Why is there so much poverty? Why is there so much violence? Is because in some communities, they are not winning the war. In those communities who are from the very beginning measured by, their race, their economic class, their education, they are not winning the war. And therefore, it requires that we have to do serious evaluation as to why we're not winning the war of competition and challenge. I want to begin today in this particular teaching to bring something to mind. Angels don't carry swords for decoration. The mind of a spiritual warrior who wins requires that he has to use a sword. Now again, I say, and many times in our vernacular and our conversation about spirituality, we don't like to talk about challenges. We don't like to talk about war. We don't want to deal with the fact that, yes, when you decide in this world that you want to raise and send out into the world a certain kind of child, and therefore you have to raise that child in a certain kind of environment, we don't want to realize that, yes, there's a great deal of competition and challenge to do that. When you set out to say that you want to build a certain kind of neighborhood and you want to live in a certain type of culture, the fact is that to do that requires that you're going to have to fight. You're going to fight to have that kind of environment. In a lot of our environments, it's easy to see that those environments are victims of a battle loss, because in among those people, they do not have, if you will, they do not have spiritual warriors, people who know how to wage war. And we can try to talk about a world of peace but we don't live in that. And this is the reason why I raised the image of that we see in the Bible about Jesus. He said, I came to bring a sword. Think about that. And even though we like to show a flaccid, a kind of a limp wrist type Jesus who loves everybody, but when you read the Bible, it's telling us that Christ's consciousness contains a dual or a double mind or personality that have to be joined together. It says, be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. And those two mindsets, when combined, creates the mindset of a person who is tough-minded yet tender-hearted. As a matter of fact, we're going to go deeper into this today because I want to talk about the ancient war manual that was written 5,000 years ago, placed in a book that we read today called The Art of War by Sun Tzu. Because what I want to share with you is a philosophy that connects to the passage I just shared in Matthew 10, verse 16, a wise serpent, a harmless or innocent dove, becomes the mindset of a spiritual warrior at the highest level. I say again, angels don't carry swords for decoration. The mind of a spiritual warrior who knows how to win requires the ability to use a sword. With the sword, that angel knows how to cut things off, how to cut things down, and how to cut away from certain things that is not consistent with the game of winning a war. See, a soldier can't win a war without a clear definition of what it means to succeed. One of the things that I learned some years ago when I was in seminary was that a Hebrew word that means to cut off is the word karat. Karat. You can spell it or you can transliterate it as K-A-R-A-T. What's interesting about this word is that it also means the covenant. And what I understand to covenant means, to covenant with somebody means to agree. So the question comes, have you made a personal agreement with your angel, with yourself, with your family, with people in your community who desire the same things, that they want a certain kind of quality of life in the area of economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war, that you want a certain kind of quality of life in those nine categories, and you agree to have that kind of life. The question is, have you made an agreement to that? So, with that being said, I want you to ask yourself, if we are not winning and we are not growing in these nine areas, what it means is that we have not made a decision, cut off immature behavior and thought. We have not made a decision to covenant with our family and friends and willing to separate ourselves from those who are not committed to our personal or collective success and security. In other words, we have not developed the mind of a spiritual warrior, that is, angelic consciousness, because this requires a certain type of thought, wisdom, and understanding that has to be developed in order for us to win. Even when we deal with issues of geopolitics, those people who are able to adapt and adopt a certain type of cultural or historical legacy that is shared with them, how to negotiate, how to win, have an advantage over people who do not. So this is what we call the art of war. Now, I want to particularly situate this in the context of, let's say, my community. But stop. I'm going to stop here. And before I share this particular aspect, I want to give the caller at 225-773 an opportunity to make a comment if that's what they want to do. Hi, 225-773. Put your hand up. You have a comment you want to make?
I'm just listening.
Okay. All right. Let me go to this number, 870-590-592. You have a comment you want to make? Arkansas number 870-592-0794. Okay, I guess you're just holding as well. All right, let's keep going. I want to share this point of view. Back in 1995, because I've been a person who has worked in the Afro-American community for quite a while, and I have truly been concerned about the quality of life in this community. And in 1995, I actually wrote a book called "Tell Me Like It Is." And here's something that I noticed and that I want to share. It says, "I say this: remembering the definition of an unjust society or a racist society, I mentioned that." Racism is an intensely sexual conflict whereby white male supremacy, the logical antagonists of this ideology, are black males. Therefore, to ensure that the black community stays in a position of dependency, black males' growth to manhood must be undermined. The old proverbial saying, which states, "Never send a boy to do a man's job," is true. The ability to govern a society, lead a home, structure a school system, develop an economic business district is adult work. To the extent we continue to have boys in the hood masquerading as men, the African-American home, community, and church will suffer from the demise of inferiority and immature, unprepared people in leading this community. So let's separate boy psychology from adult psychology. Boys have babies. Men raise children. Boys are players. Men make commitments. Boys are fighters. Men are warriors. Boys can be smart, but men are wise. Boys consume, men provide. Boys are fearless, men are cautious. The distinctions are endless. Yet again, the tragic reality in this society is that too many of God's children are failing to develop toward physical, intellectual, social, and spiritual authority. The consequences of being locked in a perpetual state of immaturity, undevelopment, mental undevelopment, is having to function in a very competitive world at the level of inferiority. This is the frustration and the desperation many feel when they are unable to meet life's seemingly unlimited demands because they have failed to mature themselves in all areas of people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, religion, sex, and war. So it's time to grow up. There's a book, or shall I say, there's a philosophy that I have read quite some time. It is a philosophy that derives itself from Sun Tzu, the art of war. Many of our Asian brothers and sisters who have been raised in this, in their own cultural, this cultural manuscript called The Art of War, use it in a business sense to compete in world economics. Therefore, what I'm saying is that they use a war manual as a guide to know how to do business, because whether we want to accept it or not, everything comes down to competition for goods and services, for power, for position, possession, and status. And those who know how to negotiate, those who know how to compete, win. This is the reason why we play athletics. Those teams that are most prepared, most disciplined, win. Those nations compete against other nations for power, position, place, and possession, overcome those who are not. And therefore, to the extent that you as an individual, we as a culture, are not prepared and do not know how to engage and do not know the secrets of winning, we will lose. So this is the philosophy that many of our Asian brothers use in their ability to negotiate with others in the world for position, placement, power, and possession. It's called the art of being thick-faced, black-heart. That's similar to what I read and what I see in reading this Eastern document that we call the Bible, to be wise as a serpent and innocent as a dove. This is to be thick-faced, black-heart, can be used by people who do not have good intentions, who we might label as evil. But it's also when I begin to study spiritual warfare, it is also the philosophy that saints and mystics and spiritual warriors, even angels, use in order to maintain their power, placement, and position. In other words, I do not believe that God has called us to be victims, but to be winners. But the key is that we have to know how to win without creating a backlash of negative karma and consequences. So, how do you live? How do we live in a world that's very competitive and not be a victim of it? There was a 16th century Japanese swordsman or sword master named Miyamoto Musashi. He is quoted to say this: "The warrior is one who uses the pen and the sword with equal skill." What I understand this to mean is that in their culture, and yes, even in many winning cultures, they do not make a distinction between spirituality and politics, economics, education. In other words, education is spiritual and political and militaristic. Yes. I'm going to say it again. Education is political and spiritual and political. You can't separate them. A person can use education as an act of war to hold another people down while they appear to be while they appear to be doing a good thing, it could be an act of war against them. A great book that I would encourage everybody to read is The Miseducation of the Negro. Miseducation, though it may appear that it is a good thing, it can be used as an act of violence against another nation, a community, a culture, to keep them oppressed. The soldier who is balanced in his understanding of life is able to master the virtue of his weapon. The spiritual warrior possesses spiritual tools in order to win the war. This is one of the reasons why it's important, because it's important to understand that we do live in a spiritual context, and it is political that you have to have spiritual tools to win a spiritual war. Education is a spiritual tool. And yet the idea of not understanding and really appreciating how to use your tools, and not even knowing that there are spiritual tools, means that those cultures that do understand spirituality at a very deep level will have an advantage view in the area of religion. So spiritual miseducation, spiritual ignorance, perceived as spiritual truth, is an act of war. I was sharing with a friend of mine today that while, at least in my context, where you have this type of religion that is emotional, not necessarily intellectual, and definitely not deep in our community, and while people are jumping and dancing and waving their hands like they just don't care, there are other cultures who are exploring the deeper levels of spirituality, understanding it in a very precise historical, cultural, and high level of understanding. For example, I've had a chance to see spiritual competition going on among some of our Asian brothers, and they are truly exploring the power of chi and using chi to break tile with a light bulb. They're learning how to project their spiritual energy in such a way that they can alter matter. Now you think about that. Here are people in one community who deny and denounce and have and are spooked out by things like chi and ki and reiki and other types of energy movements and power. And here's another culture teaching their kids, who are called super psychics, how to use it. Now you tell me, when it comes down to competition and engagement, which one of those children raised in that type of religion and culture will have the advantage? When one group of people value watching TV, value hanging out in the streets, value basically doing nothing, smoking dope, have no sports, have no concern about understanding science and math and physics, and another group is leading in those areas of studies, tell me, who has the advantage if there is a competition? And there are many competitions that go on where you see children who come from families, who come from cultures, who place a priority over understanding science and physics and other things like that, and they are leading in that area. Tell me who has the advantage in terms of competition in the area of economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war. These are things that when we want to ask the question, why does this community look undeveloped? And this community is progressing and developing. we have to begin to look at the fact is that we are not necessarily developing ourselves in the area where it should be. So when I talk about spiritual tools such as talismans, certain talismans that banish negative spirits, certain talismans that banish spirits that cause sickness and loss or lose spirits. In other words, the Magi power sigils that we present many times on the website, Gnosis Matters. Do you understand why it's important that these types of tools and energy tools are important to have inside your home, have it inside your family, that you can pass down from one generation to the next generation? Because this has everything to deal with survival. It has everything to deal with winning. And so that's why I'm bringing this information. You see, we are sheep in the midst of wolves. We have external enemies, and we have internal enemies. We have spiritual enemies. Buddha conscious, Christ conscious, man or woman, is not only a person of peace, but they also are people of war. Okay? A good man's actions don't always appear to be gentle. They may be ruthless, cold, and disparate. Because to be a winner requires that you have to have that type of mind, to be wise as a serpent and yet harmless as a dove. And just think about that for a minute. To be wise as a serpent. The serpent is linked to wisdom. In other words, a serpent is linked to a type of wisdom that understanding that goes beyond just being emotional. We know that a part of our brain is called the reptilian brain. It knows how to make a decision. It has what we would call a killer instinct. We're going to break that down a little bit later. A killer instinct who knows how to close a deal. Do you know there are people who, when it comes down, they may be very smart, they may have an understanding, but they do not know and are unwilling to be able to call it and know how to close a deal? When I think of athletes like Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan, what they possess is the ability to take that shot, to make that decision. That's profound. What does it mean to be able to have that killer instinct matched with that purity, that innocence of a dove? In other words, this is a person who knows how to be cool, calculated, precise, killer instinct, and yet at the same time has character. What this means in the context of the philosophy of thick face black heart is that a person must be able to have character and at the same time be competent. Or as Dr. King says in his book, Strength to Love, to be tough-minded, wise as a serpent, and to be tender-hearted, to have character. It's the combination of the reptilian brain with the mammalian brain combined in the neocortex, which is your highest state of adult development, at least at this time as we think, to know how to have that, to have combined those two aspects of your personality, the reptilian part, as with the cerebellum, the mammalian part inside of an adult mind that's combined those two, left, right brain, that type of instinct in such a way that that person is effective to be able to pull off this task. In other words, we must develop the character of thick faced black heart. Now, what is thick faced black heart? Let's go into this. What does it mean to be a practitioner of a thick faced black heart? First of all, when you conceal your will from others, that's thick. When you impose your will on others, that's black. Black heart is the secret law of nature that governs successful behavior in every aspect of life. To get inside the mind of a spiritual warrior, that person possesses the ability to conceal their will. They can be stealth. At the same time, they will impose their will. That's what it means to be black-hearted. Now, that may sound surprising in terms of to apply that in a spiritual context, but it really is spiritual. Let's talk about thick faith. Thick faith is the shield. It's the shield. How do others think about this? Let's kind of go back. When a person has the ability to shield or to conceal their will, that means they have developed the type of consciousness that is not, how can I put this? They have developed the type of consciousness that is not focused on what other people think of them. So let me ask you this. How do others see you, and how much does it matter? Do other people see you as weak? Do they see you as ignorant, mean, angry, fearful, impulsive, deceptive? And it doesn't matter to you. When a person has a thick face, because in some cultures, how people see you matters. That is, what people's opinions about you matters. But to a soldier who's intent on winning, to a player who's on a team and they have been given a role, they're not concerned about when other people are laughing at them, when other people are calling them names, because many times a warrior, a true warrior, wants you to think of themselves. They want, as a matter of fact, they get great delight in misdirecting you to feel that they are nobody, they are weak, or they are ignorant. Oftentimes, the person who is not a good warrior, who does not know how to compete, wants making sure that people see how smart they are. They get upset if people think less of them. But to a thick-faced practitioner, he will pretend to be a pig so he can eat the tiger. In the 1940s, America didn't have such a high opinion of Asian people. If you go back and you look at some of the movies that many Asian people, or at least the Asian culture, was presented. If you go back and look at that back in the 50s and the 60s or whatever, it wasn't very complimentary of Asian people. They had them in positions of inferiority. They may be cooks. They would always oppress people. Picked on, that kind of thing. They make caricatures of their facial features, things like that. And even politically, when this nation dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, people felt like it didn't mean anything. And yet, here we have come 40, 50 years later, 60 years later, and look at the image of the Asian person in our culture today. Think about it. They allowed us to laugh and make fun of them in America. And, you know, we were like a little cowboy, you know, we felt like we were running the world. And we put people down and we made fun of them. But we're not laughing and making fun of them today when we drive Nissans and we get products called Mitsubishi and Sony. No, we have great respect. But they allowed us to have our arrogant pride while they came and took the abuse and the disrespect and was slowly building their economy, their education, their labor, law, politics, religion. They were continually building while we were laughing. They were playing the game of being thick-faced. In other words, pretending to be a pig, preparing to eat the tiger. Now, on the opposite side, I see in the cultures of Afro-Americans, very sensitive, seemingly very insecure, always have to be seen in a positive light, because we get concerned and let our shield down about how people look and speak about us and do not understand that sometimes when you let people laugh, you got time, because they're not taking you very seriously, time. You have time to develop. How does their perception affect your success to get what you want in life? That's what we're talking about. Many times I find that, particularly among many young Afro-American people, their ability to take criticism, their ability to be able to not, rather than the inability to take criticism, or there's a sense of shame in the history of their ancestors being slaves and the need to always have to have the ego stroke to remind people, and it is true, that you come from a great legacy of African pharaohs and great cultures, great civilizations, and all that kind of stuff. But ask yourself, does knowing that history really change your ability to be able to do the math and to be able to repeat the science that your ancestors did have over the world? And why should people be ashamed of having slaves, being slaves as a part of their historical tradition? Because if you go back and you look at what many black people did in times past, when they were in positions of inferiority, they accomplished great things. And I don't need to go through the whole list of black inventions and black accomplishments when black people's position in society wasn't all that great, and definitely when there was great stereotyping of the African mind. And it continues to go on. So sometimes we have to understand that, yeah, let people laugh. Let people call names. Call your name. Let people discount your ability, because that's when you can sneak up on them. That's the mind of a spiritual warrior. It's the team, the basketball team, that nobody thinks that can win, that nobody has great, they hadn't studied the tapes of them. They don't know what you're able to do. That's the team that's most dangerous. But the team that's out there that's in the public, the team that's actually beating its chest, and the team that's out there that everybody sees and knows what they have, that's the team you can plan for. The team you should be most concerned about is the team that comes out of nowhere, but they have great players, and we don't know who they are. So, this is about to be thick-faced is about not being concerned about your ego. Is knowing how to shield yourself. Somebody was telling me today is that when you first go on a date, the worst thing you can do is tell everybody, tell the guy, tell the guy everything about yourself, to let everything about yourself be known. In other words, the old people would share with their young women when they go on a date. No, keep some things to yourself. Don't let a person know everything about you. They were speaking in a sexual context. Don't let everybody know everything about you. In other words, have something, hide something. Don't reveal it until it's time. That's the art of being thick-faced, to shield your will, to shield your ego. It also means, too, is that sometimes when you do have insecurities, when you do have self-doubt, when you do have self-confidence, a problem with self-confidence, sometimes it's best not to talk. Sometimes it's best to be quiet because a person doesn't know who you are, does not know what you're about, does not know where you're coming from when you are quiet and everything. And so sometimes that may work for you. But this is the wisdom that the ancient warriors understood. In other words, shield or to hide their will. For those of you who are Bible thumpers and masters and things like that, the fact is that even God or Yahweh in the Old Testament practiced this. In a case whereby the story is told, whereby the Pharaoh, and all this is mythology because there was none of this stuff ever really happened in history. But the fact is, where there was the situation where Pharaoh wanted to kill all the boy babies of the Hebrews, or at least the two years and younger, he wanted to kill them and everything. The Hebrew midwives were instructed by God to not tell everything that was happening in order to save the Hebrew boys. In other words, they played thick face. They made up a story. You can call it a lie if you want. They said that the children were being born before they could get to them. When Saul in the Old Testament was looking for the next king and knew that Samuel knew who it was, God told Samuel to say that he was coming there to Bethlehem or wherever David was, who was going to be the next king, to do a sacrifice. He told him, don't share this. Conceal it. See, this raises a very important point on spirituality and the issue of truth. Because when telling the truth conflicts life-saving or killing that will result in a death, the higher law is to save the life, and therefore you are not under obligation to tell a threatening force who's in your house that you know they're coming to do something that's unjust. Therefore, do not disclose the truth. Sometimes people, in their ignorance of spiritual law and hierarchy of spiritual law, will tell the truth, the full truth, so to say, to their own ruin. This is very important. This is very important that we need to know. So that's what it means to be thick-faced. It's to hide your will. But what does it mean to be black-hearted? And I know in our society, anything that's dark or black tend to see it as negative and everything. That's not good. But this is not a case where people should think so simplistically. To be black-hearted is the ability to act for the good of the self and the common good for all. When a person expresses black-heartedness, In other words, they do not allow themselves to be so empathetic, so sympathetic, that it gets in the way of them taking action, whereby they freeze and they cannot do what needs to be done. See, when you think about a cobra, you think about a snake. When that snake feels that its life is being threatened, it will execute a strike. It will do it with cold, calculated precision. It will deliver the death blow. It will do it. In other words, a warrior who is black-hearted or has a tough mind, who is wise as a serpent, has the ability, cold ice water in its vein, to finish the job. So what I'm saying is this: when I look at our community, in many of our communities that are undone, and they have incomplete business, incomplete structures in the business. Something has started, but it hadn't finished. What that tells me is that the art craftsman, the carpenter, the contractor, is not a thick-faced, black-hearted practitioner. When I see businesses that are unkept, and when the work is half done, that tells me that the craftsman, the worker, the owner of the store, the people who live in that community, do not have spiritual warriors who know how to finish a job, who know how to achieve excellence. To achieve excellence requires that you have to have a killer instinct. You got to knock this out. Let me give you an example. When you look at a person who does great work of art, you may see a marble statue in a hotel or in a facility, a museum, or in some type of a facility, a building, auditorium. Think about what that statue was before it became a beautiful work of art. It was a piece, a hunk of stone or marble. What did the artist have to do in order to craft that piece of stone, that undeveloped, unshapen piece of stone or marble? What did that craftsman have to do? It had to take a hammer and a chisel, violently strike it more than one time. And what that means to me is that that person had the courage and had the commitment to strike, to hit with precision enough times where something beautiful came out of that violence, that appeared to be violent. And to do that, he couldn't feel sorry for the stone. He couldn't have a type of weakness and over compassion. Oh, I'm hurting the stone. Oh, I don't know if I want to hit this. That's so violent. It just looks so bad. One of the problems, the reason why I bring this up as an example, because one of the problems I see in leading people today in spirituality, in developing children today to go out into the world, is we parents are too busy trying to be friends to the kids, trying to be liked by their children, that they are not able to craft the kind of child that can be competent and have character and have the commitment to do the work that they are called to do. Because we're too busy trying to love our children rather than, and I mean that in a negative sense, rather than develop them. What I'm trying to say is that we let stuff that times past, grandmothers and grandfathers past, would not tolerate. And you may not like the fact that they may call you a name, or they may, you know, like they would say back in the day, at least when I was a kid, I'll knock the stew out of you. And I'm trying to be nice with the word stew. Now, why did they say that? Why did grandmama say that, grandmother say that? Why did grandfather wouldn't let you sit in his house as a young man, 15 years old, 18 years old, and just sit in the house and not go to work? That would allow you to sit there, craftsman of taking a boy from a boy to a man. He understood that you needed the hard discipline of work if you're going to be eventually a somebody's father or the leader of somebody's community, or to be able simply to take care of yourself. They would not allow you to sit there up in the house and sit there in the house and drink all the lemonade and watch TV with your feet propped up on a table. You're getting up. The mothers of old would not allow their daughters to not know how to do things, but just get away with being lazy and not knowing how to cook. So study, work. They were not raised that way. They understood that it may not feel good to the kid. It may not feel good to the player who has a coach that would make them run line drills, make them practice, you know, all day, and then run. He understood, I'm preparing you for the big game. But today is different. Coaches can lose jobs. Pee-wee coaches can get cussed at, if they demand discipline of those boys or girls who are they're preparing for a game. Because you hurt my child's feelings. See, I grew up in a time where if you were not able to perform enough to compete with the other guys for a position or for a suit on a team, you got cut. That's the word of a soldier, of a sword. It cut. You had to make the team. And your mama couldn't come and argue with the coach on why her baby couldn't make the team. Yes, there were times when I got cut off a team. I was not good enough. So what did I do? Did I go and complain to mom and dad and say, you know, use your influence to get me on the team because my feelings are hurt. My ego is suffering. No, you go back out there and you develop and you prepare and you work. And if you then are good to achieve, you make the team. Today, everybody gets a certificate. Everybody makes the team. Why? Because it hurts the little boy and the little girl's feeling. So what happens to that same little boy and little girl when they have given, they've been given the false pretense of that they are competent? Because they were socially promoted, or because they were allowed to get a job or get a promotion or get a grade that they did not earn. Now, do you want that person being your surgeon? Do you want that person leading your city? No, you wouldn't, because that person doesn't even know in their own self that they really are competent, because they have been given an easy way up. To be black-hearted as a coach, to be black-hearted as a parent, is not black-heartedness that you don't care, you don't really love, but that you really have a commitment to excellence. You have a killer instinct. And I truly believe this is why a player like Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, even Darth Vader or Dracula or a general in an army, who has developed that instinct to know how to finish a product, how to, yes, even make the call to for young boys or young men to go to war. That's not an easy call to make. To be able to be committed to your values and your goals enough whereby you will cut off a good friend who does not embrace the direction that you're trying to go. The truth of the matter is that one of the major problems, even in relationships, is that we are not committed enough to cut ourselves away from people, be they family or friends, to cut ourselves away who drain our energy and who have no commitment to their greatness or to our greatness. We won't cut it off. We won't walk away, even when we're not getting benefit from the relationship. And this is why when you look at our neighbor, at our neighborhoods, they lack committed leaders, craftsmen, who leave behind work undone. So, when you go inside the mind of a spiritual warrior, when you go inside the mind of a spiritual warrior, what you find are people who have discovered the secret, face black heart, a tough mind, tender heart. This is the law of nature that governs successful behavior in every part of our lives. When you look at the beauty of our universe, the precision of our solar system, the beauty of our planet, when you look at successful and glorious nations that have been crafted and built, what we see really is a result of a commitment to excellence, a commitment to beauty, a commitment to goodness, a commitment to completion that requires a thick-faced, black-hearted practitioner. It requires a gardener, a craftsman type of man who is committed to excellence, so much so that they will shield their will and expose their will at the right time with beautiful efficiency. The character is not made from sunshine and roses, but between the hammer and the anvil. So what this means to me is that instead of when life becomes difficult and the teachers of life that we call the teacher of life experience places upon us a demand, it is not coming out of punishment for sin or judgment or condemnation. It is the loving presence of the Divine Mother, who we talked about last week as the Dark Mother, loving us so much that it wants to burn away in the furnace of experience. It wants to burn away that which is not true of who we really are, so that that which is true of us, that internal glory, can come forth and shine. Tapping into evolved, non-destructive nature of being a thick-faced, black-heart practitioner, it will give you the freedom to achieve abundance and effectiveness in the execution of your life mission. And we are here to live, to learn, to love, and to leave a legacy of excellence. And we have to be committed to that. Thick-faced, black-hearted practitioner must exercise his ability or her ability to ignore criticism, ridicule, vilification from others and even from themselves in order to get the job done with efficiency and killer execution. When it comes time for us to have these types of realities that develop in our community, we must develop the type of people who are spiritual warriors, who love us so much that they will not allow us to fail at our ability to be the best that we are. When I think of two men who express thick face, black heart, who express tough mind, tenderheartedness, who express what wisdom as a serpent and yet innocence and love as a dove, I think of these two men. I think of Martin Luther King Jr. and I think of Malcolm X. Now, I know that in our society, many of us have been trained not to look at Malcolm. But Malcolm represents the other side of Martin King to balance us out. Both of those men who came into our existence in the 1960s were meant to be taken together to instruct not just black folk, but in particularly black people, but meant to instruct the nation of the type of mentality that we must develop. Martin represented the tenderheartedness of integration. And Malcolm represents the tough-mindedness of black power. To be tough-minded, tenderhearted, is the type of mentality that has to be developed in our culture today in order that we might truly in order that we might truly make America great. Not again, but make America great. There has to be an alchemical change. There has to be a transformation within our understanding to not just simply be love and light, but to be wisdom and power. The two have to come together. Part one of Inside the Mind of a Spiritual Warrior. Again, it's important that you have tools. And I want to encourage anyone who is really about developing the mind of a spiritual warrior, you've got to have tools. And the tool that I would truly recommend is the Magi Power Center. When you are ready, as I was telling a person who I was counseling today, when you are ready to deal with power, when you are ready to be the kind of person who can make a difference, you got to have the kind of tools. And the Magi Power Sigils are a starting point. Now, what I'm going to do, I continue this lecture next week on the Gnostic Bridge and the House of Gnosis, we're going to understand why developing your angelic consciousness, why connecting with angels who truly are soldiers, who truly are the type of spirits who know how to make a decision, who carry swords. I say again, angels carry swords for a reason. Because in their commitment to the mission of who they are as called by the gods, angels will cut stuff off, cut stuff away, And the principle is, if you don't want an angel to make a decision to cut something out of your life, then you must take up the sword and you must make the decision. Because if you don't, they will. So we are being called to develop our angelic conscience, our angelic consciousness. The way you develop an angelic conscious mind is that you have to connect with the angels and allow them to show you. The more angelic talismans that you have in your presence, you bring the thought and the thought patterns of those angels into your life. If you want certain angelic talismans, by all means, contact me, and I can. There are 72 angels that I do work with that, based upon what type of precision you need in your life, we can craft that angelic talisman to bring into your home, into your consciousness, into your experience. Just call Gnosis Matters at 870-872-1582. I truly encourage you to connect with talismans of power. We have the, obviously many of you know about the Goddess Fortuna Easy Wealth Talisman. We encourage you to get the talisman to protect your home, the talisman of home protection. We definitely encourage you to have a special angelic talisman that is connected to your own mind, to your own person, to get that kind of talisman. We encourage you to do that. And by all means, the Magi Power Sigils. Anybody who's truly serious about developing their spiritual power and ability to protect their family, their business, themselves, their children, I would truly say connect with the Magi Power Sigils. Just simply either go to the website www.gnosismatters, that's Gnosis, spelled GNOSISMATTERS, matters, MATTERS, or you can call me at 870-872-1582. But we're going to stop here, and we're going to see if there's anyone that would like to make a comment or have a question to me about tonight's subject, Inside the Mind of a Spiritual Warrior Who Wins. Just simply press 1, and that will indicate to me that you want to make a comment or you have a question, and I'll be happy to oblige you in your comment or question. Okay? Let's go here. 480-331, you're on the Gnostic Bridge. Okay, go ahead. I got the mic on. Okay.
Hey, Magus, this is Thomas Shalar. How you doing, man?
How you doing, Thomas? Good to hear your voice, man. How's everything going with the trucking business?
Things are going good. I'm in the repair shop right now. I had to get my door fixed. But everything's going good with the trucking, man. I'm about to go see my lady before I get into business class. They had promoted me to make more money.
Okay.
So everything's looking pretty good.
Okay. What's your comment tonight, Thomas?
Well, I just wanted to commend you on pushing this topic because I've always been very seriously always thought of myself as trying to forge, as you use the words, forge myself into being a spiritual warrior. It's definitely something that I I have a pretty solid plan on getting to a point in my life where I can begin to commit to the practices that's required for this type of status. So I just it's just this topic's just resonating with me. As well as narcissism, I was also looking into that as well, as well as Kabbalah and the me and Phelan had actually just bought the Zohar. So definitely committed on doing stuff like that. I definitely the light resonates with me, and defending it resonates with me, because I've always for a long time I was like, you know, there's really no spiritual teachers with real power on this earth to actually go ahead and overcome this, what I like to call a negative blanket that covers this earth. There's spiritual leaders, but no one of really any great power. And when I saw how quickly the military and government businesses were just overcoming the people and quote unquote being too big to fail type of attitude. And I just knew that you can't overcome the spirit, or you can't overcome this world with the current methods that are in place. I believe you may have said something similar to that before. World, in order for it to be overcome or turned back into light, has to be done by spiritual means and spiritual methods. This topic is definitely resonating with me.
Yeah, man, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I know for sure in the work that you do that you are challenged, and you have to meet that challenge, and that many times requires having a certain type of mind and an approach to take on challenges like the ones I know that you meet in the real world. And you're a father. You are a father. You have and are raising sons, and that, and not just sons. You're raising black sons, and what they have to contend with, what you had to contend with, obviously as a man, is very unique, and it takes a certain type of mentality. And you can't always be tiptoeing around certain kind of things with your boys. You have to tell them, you got to prepare them for the real world, not as you wish it would be, but as it is.
Yeah, exactly. No softening on the truth of the matter or the processes that are necessary, and show them all by proof, by example. I always believe proof by example was the best teacher, because not only are you showing the technique, but you can show that the technique works, and you can actually show how the technique is done. So some people learn by reading, some people learn by listening, but I have serious success and a lot of success with proof by example, and that's exactly what I'm going to do with my sons. I want to be a proof by example. I just don't want to be a talker that says, hey, you know, this can happen. It's in theory that can happen. I want to say, boom, this is how it's done.
I know that's right, man.
That's a great step towards handing down, if I may use the word, warriorship to my family.
Yeah, bro. You know, you really got to be a warrior. And that's what we're missing out. The type of discipleship that has to go on to prepare a boy to be a man, and that's or a girl to be a woman, for that matter. It's not just simply just getting older, just growing up. There's a certain type of training has to take place. And I actually really do like the philosophy of a thick faith, black heart. I think it's a spiritual practice, and that's what that's what I teach here at the House of Gnosis in Pineville, Arkansas.
Yeah, and there's no punches spared when you're when you have the machine gun of Gnosis Matters knowledge being thrown on this here radio here. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
Just one more comment. This is actually a compliment. I've always admired you laying it down rough and rugged and raw when it comes to just the truth, man. And you definitely take your time in explaining it and making sure everything is clear and everything is kosher. So I just want to personally thank you for just manifesting the thing that you have a passion about the way you do.
All right. Thank you, Thomas, for your call, man. And God bless you, man, as you continue to do your work. And tell Faye I said hi.
Will do. Same to you, man. God bless you.
All right. Take care, bro. Okay, 951-374. Tell us your name and where you're calling from, and you are on the Gnostic Bridge.
Dean Reverend Bullard, this is Benjamin Harrell calling from California.
Well, hey, Benjamin, it's been a while since we've talked. Okay, brother, sorry about that. Go on, Benjamin. So, to me. Let me go back here.
It was right on time. The things that you were saying just gravitated to everything that I've been talking to older men about as far as having that lineage and that conduct. And it seems like these younger men don't understand where we're coming from, but how you stand, how you present yourself, and how you take pride in them being in a certain way. And in this society right now, that's being attacked not only by younger men, but it's being attacked by women. Unfortunately, because they don't know better to appreciate the characteristics of a man to make a decision and not be apologetic because he's trying to provide or he's trying to do the best thing for him, his family. You made the analogy of the angels. When they get in, they ain't in the room, ain't no playing. Okay?
No.
There's going to be some results and some consequences. Now, what side you want to be on, that negotiation was way before they entered the room. And that's how certain men you see in the room, and you knew it was kind. We should have negotiated this way before uncle or big cousin came through. Because now that choice is gone. And like I said, the aspect of them being mean, not about being mean, it's about doing what needs to be done at that point in time. And being the warrior and being kind-hearted, sometimes people don't understand that in the sense that certain things need to be done for the survival of your integrity and the survival of your honor and the people who are you surrounded by and who you will put your life on the line for. Those should be the first ones to appreciate your gestures. But like you said, without the training and the recognition, there is a society of individuals who are lost and are not searching. And you said that spiritual waters is something that comes from within. And unfortunately, more conversations, I tell people, when I hear certain conversations, I ain't built for that cloth, okay? my daddy didn't make me this way. So,
let me ask you something, Benjamin. Let me ask you this question. Have you noticed that in like Pee Wee sports and these, you know, when you're trying to teach a kid how to play football or play basketball at the Pee Wee level before they get into junior high school, that there's this tendency that, you know, all kids must be on the team.
All inclusive. Everybody just participate. That's a societal thing that they did in the late 80s or the 80s. And they found out it's wrong, but it's all going to be inclusive. And the thing is, they're starting to see the results of that. That being denied brings about that fire and the desire to say, okay, I got to work harder. I got to put extra time in the gym. I got to study. I got to commit myself to this. So if you revel in all the heroes of the past, even the ones that you don't know of, their work ethic is so much farther than what we got now, you don't recognize it. And when you see it, some people can appreciate it, and most people won't. Because, like you said, the aspect of craftsmanship. We don't have a society that appreciates craftsmanship. I'll go to the movie Kill Bill, where the craftsmanship of a Hachiyama sword. That's all that cat did. But when you heard that name, oh, you knew what you were going to get. And only the most adept warriors. Oh, you were blessed with one of those? Oh, okay. I know what caliber individual he will make a sword for. Okay? And as an African-American man, I understand, and I have so much pride in my forefather and what they did. Nobody will ever take that from me.
You're right, bro.
Because the blood goes to my veins. There's nothing stronger than men who were oppressed for being excellent. Excellent. And jealousy and envy. And then they want to say, take credit for that? And then tell me I didn't do nothing? Nah. I'm good. I'm good on that. I will not allow it for me, my family, or the people I conduct myself with. But you don't hear no conversation like that from the younger cats. They let somebody else dictate their lineage. If you can't stand up for your lineage, man, I don't even know if you got a set. Okay? And I'm going to try to be politically correct because, like you said, the old-timers, they kept it raw and real with you. They ain't sugarcoated because they knew this world was tough. And if you thought it was otherwise, you were getting set up. It was that person that put you through those trials and tribulations, told you to go out there, feed them chickens, go cut that wood, okay? Walk to school, okay? Because if you can put your mind mentally prepared for that, can nobody take that from you?
Absolutely.
Those messages, what kills me is men who consider themselves men won't even force their tongue to say something like that out of fear. A fear of having responsibility, of being a man, but you want to claim all the glory without the practice. It don't work that way. It don't work that way. You can try all you want. You can manufacture things all you want, but it don't work that way. And the only thing that kills me is I see all these images of other people and nothing against them because they doing what they're supposed to do. But I'm waiting for images of black men of honor and respect so people can say, you know what, that's what I want to be like. That's why I want to be that. Even if I fall short of it, I've worked at it. But like I said, Reverend Borders, I've told you many a time, man.
Yeah.
You resonate with me, bro.
You do with me as well. All right.
So,
well, man, I appreciate your call, man. And but this is on my heart. And it's when you live in a community like I live in, where you see the disparity as I see it, at some point in time you gotta call us to a higher level of being, and so that's my desire. And but I know you understand what I'm saying, and I know
that
you do appreciate the perspective in which I come from, and I appreciate
your
call. And stay in contact, man.
Almost definitely, without a doubt.
All right, then. You
have a blessed night.
You too. Okay, anybody else want to make a comment, you can call the show at 213-943-3646. Raise your hand, and I'll put your comment online. And just let me know what you got to say. We definitely miss Vinette tonight. I got deeper respect for your sister as you have handled these calls, and look forward to you being back next week. But we're going to continue to bring this subject up as we lead our way towards Father's Day. So I'm going to have a special message to the brothers and about that on Father's Day. And because we got to, we really, as Benjamin said, we really do have to raise the metaphor of a spiritual warrior in many of our communities, so we can we really begin to redevelop and build these communities. They need warriors, a particular kind of warrior. And tonight we've talked about the thick-faced black heart warrior. Again, I would say to be thick-faced is to conceal your will. To be black-hearted is to reveal your will with precision and excellence. And we need that in all areas of people activity: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Because it is in these areas that we are struggling and are not winning the war. Matter of fact, we're becoming victims in the area, in these areas, and we have to become winners. The whole desire, the whole conversation is about becoming winners. Again, the number to call in is 213-943-3646. 213-943-3646. Definitely want to encourage everyone who's listening to get you some spiritual tools at gnosismatters.com. Gnosis is spelled G-N-O-S-I-S, matters, M-A-T-T-E-R-S.com. I would definitely encourage anybody who's interested in the type of spiritual tools, and by all means understand that having talismans to be able to execute your will, or the talisman is of the highest order. And again, I want to remind everybody that in other cultures who have a legacy of spiritual knowledge, they connect to that legacy. It has been uninterrupted and continues, and it's with that connectivity that to that historical legacy that they're able to compete, that they're able to compete for any and everything. I remember one time I was in San Francisco, and I came across a Chinese family, and I saw this man who was an ivory craftsman, jade craftsman, he was. And I asked him, I said, wow. And he had his son with him. And I said, well, how long have you been doing this? He said, we're 10th generation. Did you hear what I just said? He said he was 10th generation, a 10th generational person. And I thought about me, and I said, you know, my father owned the cleaners, and so, but he didn't pass it on to me, so when he died, it died. And I thought about that, and I looked in my own city, and I asked myself many times, how many generations of businesses in my community exist? And so it became very clear to me that in order to be able to have to live in a developmental community, you have to have businesses that can last beyond the first generation, to the second, to the third, to the fourth, to the fifth. To do that, you must have business warriors, because it's one thing to have a business, it's another thing to keep it because it will be challenged. And this is why you have to have history, the knowledge, education of history, and the strategy, the training strategy to know how to defend your father's business to the third and fourth generation and what can cause it to go out of existence. This is important for us to understand. But if we are not truly developing ourselves in terms of being mature men, competent men, not inferior, not insecure, you can survive, you can win. But the more insecurities, the more immaturities, the more inadequacies that exist inside a given community, the more victimhood, the more victimizing, shall I say, takes place. That has to be worked on. That has to be worked on. And so this is a challenge to mothers and fathers. It's a challenge to leaders and businessmen in a given community, and particularly in the religious community. We have to do more than just, tap dance and jump through walls and say everything's going to be all right. We have to develop the type of institutions that can develop boys to men, girls to women. That's the key. Well, at this point in time, it seems like there are not any new callers. Anybody have their hand up, they want to speak. And so I want to thank everyone for being on the show tonight who called in. Thank all of you who listened in. By all means, I encourage you to go to GnosisMatters.com, GnosisMatters.com, or call me, Magus, Richard Bullard, at 870-872-1582. And if you have any questions about what type of spiritual tools that you need in order to develop your angelic warfare or your spirit or your angelic consciousness or to become a spiritual warrior, I definitely can help you with that. So I look forward to hearing from many of you. Other than that, we look forward to being here again next week on Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, for more of the Gnostic Bridge. Thank you for being with us tonight, and have a good night. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.